Forget the three faces of Eve. In her latest one-woman show, Anna Deavere Smith inhabits 20 different characters, male and female, young and old, from Brent, a professional bull rider, and a physician from New Orleans, to supermodel Lauren Hutton, all of whom express their thoughts on the pros and cons of the American healthcare system. The actress, playwright, and Yale professor's critically acclaimed show called Let Me Down Easy airs tomorrow at 9 p.m. on PBS as part of his Great Performances series, and I'm very pleased that it brings Anna Deavere Smith back to our show. And as you walked in, we realized that I was one of the first people who ever interviewed when you were just beginning your career.
Yeah.
And it was a traumatic experience.
Yeah.
But not because of me.
No, but let me avoid one other trauma, which is that I'm a professor at New York University. I started the project we're going to talk about today in a visiting professorship at the Yale Medical School, but I'm not a Yale professor. So I almost got killed, I think, on the way to, you know, this glorious first experience with you. I was working at the Public Theater at the time, my play Fires in the Mirror, and the kid from Public Relations, who was this tall, gorgeous, lanky Jimmy Stewart kind of guy from Nebraska, and I were in a cab. I was freshly, you know, from San Francisco, and the cab driver got in a fight with another driver, took out from under his dashboard a wrench and was jumping out of the car to try to kill this guy, who was one of these guys with chains and the hair slicked back. We jumped out of the cab and just ran and came to your offices.
Oh, welcome to New York.
Yeah. Welcome to New York, and in some ways, welcome to my career. It was really amazing.
Well, it took off from there. That was an extraordinary performance. And you pretty much devised what you've been doing since with that.
Well, actually, I devised what I'm doing way before Fires in the Mirror. I've been on my overall oeuvre is called On the Road, A Search for American Character. And so by the time I was in New York performing Fires in the Mirror, I had made 12 other shows that way. And what I do is interview people and then make these plays where I perform many characters. So,
and this is the 18th in the series?
I've lost count. It's around 18, 19, something like that. But it's something, it's a project that I've been working on for a long time.
And it's been come to be known as documentary theater.
Yeah.
So how did you come to this? This is similar to making a documentary film. You present a wide range of opinions on a subject and leave it to the audience to come up with its own answers.
Sure. And going to art school now, I would have probably gone to film school. That seemed like something way out of the possible reality. And I had a classical training at the American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco. And the stuff I was learning about Shakespeare kind of really turned some lights on for me and left me with a lot of questions that I tried to resolve about language and what that tells you about a person, how a person speaks, what it tells you. And I put it together with something my grandfather had said when I was a girl, which was, if you say a word often enough, it becomes you. Now, that's an African-American man with something like a sixth or eighth grade education. And so there began my journey. I have been trying to discover America by absorbing the words and the sounds of the people. And that's my life's work.
So you deal with the way Americans speak.
How they speak. And now
and
more.
And you include everything, the ums, the ers, the discontinuous sentences.
The music.
And are these exact transcriptions of what people
said
to you during
the
interviews?
Well, it's the attempt. I mean, I memorize all those little utterances, but I'm human.
How quickly can you pick up someone's voice? Some people are, I'm sure, a lot easier than others.
Well, you know, it's a lot of work. I mean, to really create one of these quote unquote characters based on their real words is a healthy chunk of work. A lot of work. I'm not really a mimic in the sense of
you're not Rich Little.
No, I mean, when I was a girl, I mimicked the teacher, and that's how I made friends. But you know, I'm not, grown up now.
Have you noticed any changes in the way that Americans have spoken over the years?
Oh, sure. So have you. You know, I had a cab driver one day who was really upset about the people he drives around New York City, you know, and he was talking about how, you know, oh, I mean, now everything's awesome. Everything's awesome. Remember when it used to be cool? Now it's wow, and everything's dude. Hey, dude, want to come out to my house in the Hamptons this weekend? It'll be awesome. So, yeah. It changes.
He's been listening in on his passengers' conversations and getting annoyed. Maybe you should just tune out a little bit. You're also an accomplished film and television actress, and you've appeared in a lot of stuff, including Nurse Jackie and The West Wing. Is the process here totally different from acting a role that someone has written for you?
It's a completely different process. Two different processes. Both have different demands.
But you're getting into characters in either case, aren't you?
But, you know, so on Nurse Jackie, there's this brilliant writer, the two brilliant writers, Liz Brixius and Linda Wallum and their team. Liz was a poet. Linda was a stand-up comic. And so, you know, I'm trying to create Mrs. Acolytis, but I'm also diving into their imaginations. And so it's this extraordinary combination of sort of somebody inspired by Wallace Stevens and then the other person inspired by Carol Burnett. And you try to fuse that to bring them something that they'll say they liked. I just try to make them happy because I'd really admire them both.
What we'll be seeing on PBS stations tomorrow night is a film of a live performance that you've done. Now, this thing debuted at the Long Wharf Theater in January 2008.
Wow, yeah, a workshop.
And when did you film this?
So I filmed it last year. I played it in New York for 6 months, and then I took it on the road for 9 months and launched that tour at the wonderful Arena Stage, brand-new extraordinary theater, renovated, $135 million project. Yay, Molly Smith. And so it was there that Paula Kerger, president of PBS, was kind enough to promote it getting film, because now other people can see it.
Well,
Has
it changed at all over the years as the discussion of healthcare has, if anything, gotten more heated?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, in the beginning, it was sort of more broadly about the resilience and the vulnerability of the human body. And I had two productions, one in Long Wharf Theater 3, really, one at American Repertory Theater and one down in Texas at the fantastic Zachary Scott Theater. When it was time to come to New York is when Obama was rolling out his health care bill, and my aspiration is to be a part of the broader conversation. And so I really narrowed the focus down so that Let Me Down Easy could ultimately attempt to tell the human side of a story that I knew would be a part of a political football game.
And I'm talking with Anna Deavere Smith, whose Let Me Down Easy will be aired tomorrow night as part of the Great Performances series on PBS. Now, Let Me Down Easy is the name of a song, and it pops up in various characters here. Is this something that you prompted them on?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't name it after the song. I found out afterwards that Betty LeVette, who like, whoo, blew the sky out with The Change Is Going to Come at Obama's inauguration, extraordinary performance, extraordinary. And I found out that she had made this song called Let Me Down Easy. I woke up out of a dream and named the play that. But then I went around and asked, as I'd sort of end every interview saying, you know, this play's called Let Me Down Easy. What do those words mean to you? And so folks responded to that and gave me some very, very wonderful and creative answers.
We mentioned that you had been a visiting professor at Yale School of Medicine. How did that happen?
Yeah,
you're an actress and a playwright.
I know. Well, you know, creativity and imagination lives in all quarters. So this was a very imaginative doctor, Dr. Ralph Horowitz, then the head of internal medicine at Yale, who had seen me speak at a Martin Luther King Day and thought, wouldn't it be interesting to have this individual come here to Yale, interview doctors and patients, and mirror us at Medical Grand Rounds, which is for scientists. And that's what I did. I made this performance so that they could look at how they were doing as doctors under the pressures of technology and 15-minute sessions with patients.
And they could also see themselves through someone else's
eyes.
That's
what he was doing.
You're also artist in residence at the Center for American Progress. What does that job entail?
Well,
you're all over the place, aren't you?
You know, the thing about these residencies is it really just gives me a chance to do a first strike at that larger goal of absorbing America, right? So, for example, immediately I'm leaving on Saturday to go to Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, where I'm going to create a piece for them and be in residence there. And it's kind of funny. Years ago, I had a wonderful opportunity to work at MTV to help them with their diversity project. And when they rolled out what they wanted me to do, they summed it up by saying, and you know what? We just want you to hang out with us. So at Grace Cathedral, the new dean there has invited me to come create a piece. And she said, and you know, we just want you to worship with us. And I thought about it. I thought, oh, at MTV, worshiping is hanging out. And, you know, hanging out at a cathedral is worshiping. So I get this great chance to learn about other cultures, to be places I would not be, and to learn about people.
Are there any places that are particularly hard to for you to get? Parts of the country or ways that people talk or think?
Well, interestingly enough, you know, I think that... Look, having grown up in the theater, and the way we learn to act is something called, you know, the method, psychological realism, the idea that every character lives within us. I never believed that. I thought it was a sort of spiritual dead end. And I've been on this vigorous quest to find my opposite. And so I think I found that in Let Me Down Easy and a rodeo bull rider. And, you know, you'd be surprised how welcome you could be, even in Shoshone, Idaho, among a bunch of bull riders, if you just tell them that you're interested in them.
Well, actors have always told me that part of the fun is being somebody totally different from yourself.
Totally different, right.
Two of your previous shows, Fires in the Mirror and Twilight Los Angeles, dealt with racial discrimination. Does this show have anything in common with those stories?
Well, I think this show is different in this particular way. You know, Fires in the Mirror and Twilight, particularly for the people who come to see my shows.
Well, Fires in the Mirror for New Yorkers was particularly relevant because we were seeing people we knew, and suddenly you were inhabiting them, and it was kind of shocking and stunning and wonderful.
So you've just said it. So people were sort of shocked, stunned, and wonderfully concerned and wonderfully moved to sort of come backstage. I can't believe that happened in my city. Let Me Down Easy is a much more personal, intimate experience for the audience because it's not something that happened in your city. How you are taken care of, how you take care of other people, and how the government affects that, how the world affects that, how economy affects that, has everything to do with you and the people you love and the people you care about. So this play is, I would say, both political and deeply, deeply personal, because none of us, even Lance Armstrong, right, or Lauren Hutton, people who had perfect bodies for what they did, even they didn't escape having to be dealing with the healthcare system.
And some of them, these people have died since Joel Siegel and Ann Richards. Now, Lauren Hutton talks about the special privilege you get from being famous
and
dealing with the health. And beautiful. Does she feel at all guilty about it?
No, that's
because other
so
people
fabulous.
Do resent it. We just saw that with Beyonce giving birth in a hospital and people complaining that she was given special treatment.
Well, you know, I mean, I think this what's so fabulous about somebody like Lauren Hutton is, first of all, she grew up poor. And she knows what struggle is, and she has a profound humanity. So she, I think she's just sharing information about how, you know, when she had the flu, they went crazy because she had just signed a $1 million contract. And that hooked her up with the best doctors in the world. She's just sharing information. And I would say it's guilt-free. It's just, wow, this is how it is, guys.
Well, the people in the public eye are much more open. I mean, they're much more comfortable talking about themselves because they do it all the time. I'm assuming some of these people you really had to...
No, that's why I wanted to do the project, is when I sat down at Yale after having done 520 interviews in Washington where people actually didn't tell me very much. You know, that's the haute couture of language. Thomas Jefferson could never be found in verbal undress, and that's how everyone still acts. So I had 520, like 1,000 hours of material with not a lot of real, the kind of speech I'm looking for. Sat down at Yale, turned on the tape recorder, asked one question, what happened to you? And people were, one woman was, I said, do you pray? Father! Just started praying. Right? Another woman got up, showed me her scars. people were full of passion. If you ask somebody that is in any kind of a crisis, they're going to speak to you in a dramatic way. And let's face it, I do all these interviews, but unlike my mentor, the late Studs Terkel, it's not going to land just on the page. I'm going to have a kind of heightened dramatic language on. It's going to have to withstand the stage. So it has to be passionate talking. And everybody who I talked to had a passionate story to tell.
And it doesn't really matter what the question is, as long as it's something that...
Well, the question, the relevant question to somebody who's gone through a healthcare crisis is just what happened. That's all you need to ask, and you've got an hour's worth of beautiful talking.
Is there a message that you would like people to come away from this with?
Yeah, yes, I would, which is that it is a privilege for any one of us to step forward and lend a helping hand to somebody in a crisis, and that life is precious, that it's glorious, and let's live it that way.
Anna DeVere Smith's Let Me Down Easy will be airing tomorrow at 9 p.m. on PBS. Thank you so much for being with us again.
It is really great to be back here with you.